Yeah, man, that's a dude. Appreciate you guys so much for joining me. You want to talk about a dude? I've got something to show you. If you have not seen this yet, this is Battle Sports. So, you know, you go to these camps and there is a company called Battle, and they make backpacks, arm sleeves, all the gear and the stuff that the young guys just absolutely love. And when you see the recruits come into Ohio State, I mean, this name brand Battle is on everything. They've got so much of it. It is like the it thing for these young athletes. They got a new commercial out, and their new commercial stars Devin Sanchez. And Devin Sanchez just put down one of the funniest, best acted commercials I've seen in an extremely long time. I think I've watched this thing like 7 or 8 times on a loop because I'm just so impressed by how natural he is behind the camera. I got to show it here on the show. Take a look at this.
Hey, Devin, got something for me?
Yeah, this package.
Can I, no?
Devin?
I've had a really long day, and I would like my package, please.
I've had a great day, bro. What's the difference?
That package is for me, right?
Yeah, it's your package.
Can I have it, please?
Bro, you know what you gotta do to get that package?
Fine, I'll do it.
What are you looking at?
Give me the box!
Yeah, you want the box? I put your head in a box. Why are you trash?
I hate my life.
Thought you gonna get that box for real?
Devin Sanchez is such a talented kid, man. I mean, by the way, I wanted to say, like, camp number like 3 or 4, Devin was out there, and you know, Devin was obviously the number one cornerback in the class in 2025. Jay Timmons was the number one cornerback in the class for Rivals in 2026. And they were standing together. And if you were just walking by and I told you those guys play the same position, you would not believe it for a second. Devin is so big now. He's really filling out. Obviously, he's always been really tall and long. But Jay Timmons, the level of player you got to be the number one cornerback in your class at Jay Timmons' size is remarkable because he's not a very big kid. And it is awesome. But anyway, I wanted to pop on and do a live show today because I'm a little behind. I missed yesterday's show, and it's been a while since we've done a live. I'm a little behind schedule because we had my son's graduation party over the weekend, my youngest son. Fortunately, the last time I'm ever going to have to do that. And your boy got himself in the doghouse with Mama Bear, which I don't know if your guy's wife is like this or husband, but she would rather let me hang myself than ask me for help. Like, she would rather be mad at me after the fact. And sure enough, I didn't help enough before the party. So she let me hang myself, and I've been trying to dig myself out ever since. But anyway, here we are on a Thursday morning live, and we've got another live show coming up soon. Saturday, Carlos May's decision will be on here on the channel live. And Carlos May, a guy that I have been kind of just devouring his film the last couple of days because I'm really excited about. Now, Larry Johnson, when he recruits guys, he has so many guys that he's put in the league and so many different body types that he often says to a guy, like, I think that, you know, we can turn you into this guy. And he'll show him film of a past guy that he's coached. And I talked to Carlos and I wanted to find out who Larry compared him to. And Carlos said that Larry told him he's going to make him a combination of Caden McDonald and Tyleek Williams, but twitchier. We'll take it. We'll absolutely take that combination of Caden McDonald and Tyleek Williams, but twitchier. I don't know how much twitchier it gets than Tyleek, but that would be a hell of a player. And Carlos is a hell of a player. And I'm getting more and more excited for this announcement on Saturday. You know, a lot of people are really excited about Jahmyr Perez. Jahmyr Perez out of Glenville came in at 6'4", 360 pounds. And he told me in the spring that he was down to 340. And he looks a lot more athletic. He's carrying that weight much better. He's put on some muscle mass as well. Carlos, as of this week, is 6'3", 320. So a little bit smaller. But athletically, these guys really aren't on the same page. Like, Carlos is a guy that's just, number one, he doesn't want to just be a double team eating defensive tackle. He wants to get after the quarterback. That's one of the reasons Ohio State stands out to him, because of what he's seen from Caden McDonald and from Tyleek Williams just recently. And he doesn't want to be a guy that's just taking on double teams. And that, to me, is a little more of what Jameer Perez is going to be, because he just doesn't quite have that burst that a guy like Carlos May does. So to get those two guys together would be excellent. Obviously, bringing in Carlos May, he would be the only defensive tackle in this class. And you add him to Jameer Perez, Emmanuel Ruffin, and Damari Simeon in the class of 2026. And that core four right there is really, really good, without even talking about the edge. And I bring these guys up today because we are talking about the defensive line today, but we're talking about the current roster, not recruiting. What else do we got coming up here? Big Ten Media Days is coming up. I'm going to be going to Big Ten Media Days. That is in less than 2 weeks. And I've never been to anything like this. As you guys know, I didn't come into this as a reporter, just a Buckeye fan wanting to talk football. And now, like, I've got these unique opportunities, but man, it's really kind of nerve-wracking as well. Like, I'm going to be sitting in front of Dan Lanning and Lincoln Riley. My first opportunity to really ask these guys questions. I've never been able to do that. And I'm sitting here thinking, man, the way I present on the show, like a guy like Lincoln Riley, who most of you know, I can't stand Lincoln Riley. I can't stand him. Do I want to ask Lincoln Riley a question? And if I did, what would I ask him? Like, would I ask him, do you think it's fair that a coach can dictate a team no longer playing a rival that's been a rival for 60 years? Should a current coach be able to dictate that? Because that's what he's done with Notre Dame. And it wouldn't really be a question because I know his answer. It would kind of just be like a statement of, you're a prick and I can't stand you. And that's really not productive and probably not a good move for me. So I don't know what productive questions to ask these guys, but I'm going to be able to. So if any of you guys got any ideas for me or some information you would like me to get out of that thing, hit me up on the Substack. You can download that Substack and get in the chat for free. There's premium stuff as well. Also, Buckeye Insiders, our new website is up and running and the site is beautiful. I've published 9 articles myself since that's been up. The forum is fantastic. It's popping. If you want to become a member to Buckeye Insiders, go through the link in the description of this video, and that'll be with my promo code. And also, I am kind of proud of myself, but I made this picture here. This is my promo code, QR code. So I'm gonna leave that up for a little while. You can scan that if you want to join, but wait a minute. Is that the right one? Yeah, that's the right one. You can scan that and it'll take you to my Buckeye Insiders link. So I'm going to sit that one right up there on the top of the screen. And please make sure you like the video, but let's get into this defensive line talk today. And afterwards we'll open it up and we can talk about whatever you guys want to talk about. But as we are now less than a month from camp, we've been asking these questions here on the show. What does Ohio State, what questions do they need to answer to win a national championship? And we've gone over Julian Sain. Does he have what it takes to be a national championship quarterback in year two? The wide receivers, is there enough support to take some heat off of JJ and be able to deliver with those number 2, 3 wide receivers? Arthur Smith, can he deliver on the vision that I think Ryan Day had for what he wanted out of the offense last year? Can Arthur Smith deliver on this, improve the explosive plays, help Tyler Bowen improve the running game? The offensive line, is the offensive line a national championship caliber unit? Last year it wasn't, but I don't think that was a talent issue as much as it was a coaching issue with Tyler Bowen. Now with Art Smith coming in, losing your weakest link in Tegra Tshabala, upgrading the talent, your top 5 is unquestionably better than it was last year. Is this a national championship caliber unit on the offensive line? We also talked about the linebackers. The inevitable drop at linebacker is coming. You're not going to be as good as you were when you had Arvel Reese, Sonny Styles, and Peyton Pierce chipping in 300 snaps with those two at 600 apiece. Can you maintain a championship level at linebacker? It probably will be rocky at times early, but I think you can. I really like the unit. And the reason that we decided to go with defensive line today is because I talked to you a couple of weeks ago about Phil Steele's rankings, and he brought up, I brought up that the defensive line was ranked number one in Phil Steele's rankings, which blew my mind. You know, when we look at this defensive line for Ohio State, there's one guy who is a proven absolute stud at Ohio State, and that's Kenyatta Jackson. There's really questions galore about just about everybody else. I've got opinions on these guys. I've got strong opinions on a lot of them. I'll have stronger opinions after camp. You got opinions on all these guys, but those are just our opinions. For, you know, what we know of them, you know, there's just not much. And I try to remain unbiased when I go about my opinions, but let's be honest, we're Ohio State fans. It's hard to be unbiased. And usually we think our guys are going to be successful. We lean towards that guy's going to be successful rather than a 50-50 guy. Well, maybe that guy's going to, you know, maybe it's not going to work out for him. We usually lean towards success. So when we look at this, we see a lot of guys that are like, oh, I really like that guy. I think that guy's going to be really good. But we don't know. We don't have concrete information on hardly any of them at Ohio State. And the ones that we do, unfortunately, it's not been great. For instance, Bo Atkinson, Edric Houston, guys that are going to be big cogs in the wheel of this defensive line, was not good enough last year from either of them, plain and simple. So how is he looking at this, saying it's the number one defensive line in the country? I don't get it. I don't get it. We're bringing in some transfers, and we'll talk about each one of these guys today on the show. We've obviously got some young second-year guys that are going to make an impact this year. I'm really looking forward to seeing that. And we've got a couple of freshmen. What might we see out of those freshmen who I've got some pretty strong opinions about as well? But first, I want to go over these rankings that that Phil Steele did. Now, the reason I bring up Phil is because, number one, he's a big outlier on the defensive line here. As I went through and looked at every single top 10 defensive line list I could find, and very few of them included Ohio State in the top 10, and Phil has him number one. Now, I tend to lean towards the other guys that they're scratching the surface of the top 10, but I went ahead and put together my top 10 defensive lines, which we'll go over after we talk about Ohio State. But first, I want to show you where Phil Steele ranked all of the Ohio State units, because I think it's pretty interesting here. When you look at Phil Steele's rankings, what we've got here at quarterback, the number three quarterback room, and these are rooms in the country. So Julian Santavian St. Clair, number three in the country. Then we've got the number one wide receiver room in the country, the number two offensive line in the country, the number one defensive line in the country, running back, number 11 in the country, linebackers, number 16, and maybe as surprising to me as the defensive line, number one, the defensive backfield, number 16. That one, really surprising there. Now, when you look at that, what are the ones that pop off as super surprising to you? How about wide receivers as number one? Now, I don't know, again, Phil's from Cleveland, so I'm... Maybe he's a Buckeye honk like the rest of us. But when I look at this Ohio State wide receiver room, I also looked at his rankings for the wide receivers in the country. And he's got JJ is number one. Brandon Ennis is number 32. And the next one is Devin McCune at number 75. So if that's your top three, how is that the number one wide receiver room? Well, he's obviously saying, I think Jeremiah Smith is so good that it doesn't matter who's with him. It's going to be my number one wide receiver room. That's fair logic. That's fair logic to me, honestly. But I wouldn't have him as the number one wide receiver room going into the season. I think there's a chance it could finish that way. I think there's tons of talent here. I love some of these guys. Just a matter of who's it going to be, I don't know. But I found that one a very interesting ranking, as well as defensive backs at 16. That one is just like blowing my mind, man. I think that this defensive backfield is going to be absolutely elite. No doubt about it. Running back, I think, is fair. linebacker, I think, is fair, because while I think it's going to be a lot better, that's because I know the room a lot better than a national analyst. You know what I mean? But as far as what he's looking at Peyton Pierce, and he's looking at Christian Allegro, and then he's looking at a couple of talented sophomores who haven't played at all. Neither of them even 100 snaps in their career. So it's very fair to grade them at 16. You know, what else surprises me on that? Nothing really. But let's get to the defensive line. You know, when we look at these guys, obviously, Kenyatta Jackson is the leader of the group. Kenyatta last year, I think, and I feel like we've had this conversation for the last 2 years, was this the year that Kenyatta was going to really take that next step? So we go into last year, and I think Kenyatta did take that next step. But I think what people wanted to see was Kenyatta look like Caden Curry looked like last year, where they both played about 600 snaps, and Kenyatta Jackson logs 28 hurries, 27 total tackles, 8 sacks, set the edge beautifully, was really good in the run game. And I thought that he played great. And not only did he play great in the role that he was playing, which was different from Caden Curry's role, what he wanted was to play a little more like Caden, a little more multiplicity to his game, because Caden was able to log 12 sacks, twice as many tackles with 55. And we had that period in the middle of the season where we got Kenyatta Jackson in one of the lightning rounds after practice. And Kenyatta says flat out in front of all the media that he went and talked to Matt Patricia and said, I want to show off my pass rushing moves. I want to, you know, I want to get in on it. And he said, I could. And then we saw that immediately after. I think it was the next 2 games. We saw Kenyatta Jackson utilized similar to Caden Curry was for most of the year. And he was excellent. He was absolutely excellent. So when you look at Kenyatta Jackson and you say, like, is he going to take that next step? He did. I firmly believe he did. But we didn't get to see him in the Caden Curry role. To me, the goal of this defense is to get Kenyatta Jackson in the Caden Curry role last year. But to do that, you've got to have someone as strong as Kenyatta to take his spot, or you're going to lose your butt in the run game. And that is potentially the issue. But if Kenyatta Jackson is in the Caden Curry role, I believe he's going to be an absolute game wrecker, destroyer of worlds this year. And he should be, because he shouldn't even be in college anymore. This guy doesn't look like anybody else on the team. I mean, you can't not look at, just look at this guy. He looks like a mutant, like a cyborg, chiseled out of stone. It's unbelievable just to look at the dude. But I'm fully expecting him to be a total game wrecker this year. And when we look at some of these other guys, let's start with like Aquay Rousseau. Who's going to start opposite Kenyatta Jackson? Some people are talking about, they think Aquay Rousseau might be the guy that gets that start. And I personally was really surprised that Aquay Rousseau didn't end up in the linebacker room. I thought that he was going to be in James Laurinaitis' room and potentially trying to use him kind of in the Arvell role. When they said they were going to move him into the, you know, he's playing defensive end like full time. That's what he's doing. I was really surprised, because to me, what Aquay Rousseau is a slightly more filled out, more experienced CJ Hicks experiment. And that was destined to fail from the very beginning. And it did fail. It flamed out really, really bad. The whole thing was just not a good idea. He was too small. He couldn't handle the physicality, just playing that position. You needed to use him in a different way. And the question now is, can Aquay Rousseau handle that physicality? Now, he's a little bigger. He's a little stronger. He's built like a mutant, super twitched up. But thus far in his career, he's not been a great football player, just to be quite frank. Aquay Rousseau played 200 snaps in 9 games last year at Alabama. He got Wally pipped by Yonzi Pierre, who came in when Rousseau was injured and just took his spot, straight up took his spot. Rousseau was in on 15 tackles and 1 sack. He had a win rate of 6.3 Yanzi Pierre, playing the same position in the same exact way, had a win rate of 12.5. So Rusaw, who in pressure grades was 24 of 26 on the team, 23rd in run defense, is coming into Ohio State without a great track record on the field. What he does have are great traits. Certainly a traitsy guy, definitely looks different, and he is athletically different. There's no doubt about that. Can you be athletically different and be a not so good football player? Sure. But we're looking at those traits and we're looking at the progress. Are you going to utilize him in the right way to maximize those traits? Because he's got the speed to get out in coverage. He can do a lot. But is he fit to be the guy that is lining up starting across from Kenyatta? I don't think so. I don't think so. And I don't think that's what we'll see. How about Bo Atkinson? Coming in last year in the spring portal, Bo Atkinson. Let me star this comment here because I want to get on some of these comments you guys are knocking in here. Bo Atkinson coming in last year in the transfer portal, in the spring transfer portal. Remember, this was in the spring portal where there aren't as many guys and there aren't as many options, much more slim pickings. Bo Atkinson was a sexy one. You had Ohio State, you had Georgia going after this dude who's 6'5", 260. He's long. He's got the long flowing hair. He had two monster games against like Florida State and Boston College to end the year before. And I think all of us were really excited, if nothing else, that you had those games where he kind of like took over and you had Georgia and Ohio State going after a guy. And whenever Georgia and Ohio State are going after a guy, that's a guy you expect. They see something really good in that guy. So he comes in, and I remember being really surprised at spring camp last year, getting my eyes on him in person for the first time, that he looked a lot smaller. He looked more like a beefy basketball player than a tall football player. And it looked like he needed to put on some more mass to me. And Bo's year number one at Ohio State was disappointing, to say the least, to me. He clearly lacks the athleticism that you need at this level of football to be impactful. He had some of the worst grades on the team. He was in on like 8 tackles on the year, yet still 9.2% win rate, 3 points better than Quay Rusaw was last year at Alabama. But the narrative this spring on Bo Atkinson is that he is more flexible. He's more fluid. He's bigger and stronger. He's more athletic. Now, it is very rare to me in my lifetime that I've ever looked at a guy and said, boy, he's more athletic than last year. That's just not that's not something that happens to me. You can be bigger. You can get stronger. You can look a little more fluid. But to say someone's now more athletic, I don't know. To me, you're an athlete, and this is your level of athleticism, and that doesn't vary much throughout your career. You are the athlete you are. You can add tools, but I don't think Bo Atkinson is a very good athlete. Some guys can overcome that. He can definitely be one of those guys that overcomes some of that lack of athleticism. And definitely, I think that he's got an opportunity to be the starter across from Kenyatta and be a pretty solid one. He's certainly bigger, just won the Dude of the Week. And here is a picture of Bo. This is from this week. Let me pull that up bigger. So that's the Dudes of the Week this week. You got Earl, you got Bo, and you got Peyton. And just looking at him next to Peyton, I mean, you see how big the guy is. It's a big, big dude. So the question now becomes to me, can he play in the Kenyatta role and Kenyatta in the Caden Curry role? Because if that can work, if Bo can handle that and do it to 85% of what Kenyatta can play that role, now you're looking at a serious duo that's also, you have the opportunity to sub in a whole lot of different pieces and give a lot of different looks. Because when we look at this defensive line personnel, the bodies in the skill sets, there are so many different looks that you can throw at people because of these guys' makeup. It's so much different. You know, speaking of Bo Atkinson, Zion Grady, for instance, as a true freshman last year, was taking Bo's snaps. He was taking Bo's snaps. And he ended up playing more down the stretch. So Zion Grady coming in this year, year number two, if he was taking Bo Atkinson's snaps at the end of last year, what makes anybody think that now all of a sudden Bo Atkinson is going to like jump over him this year and it's not going to be Zion Grady? Who's to say? From everything I've heard so far, that is what happened. Bo Atkinson is in the lead here. But I find that pretty curious because Zion Grady was the guy in the lead last year. And, you know, I would expect that Zion Grady would continue to improve. Now, freshman Kari Wilder, how's he going to factor into this? Epi Satanile, how's he going to factor into this? When I look at Epi, Epi as a freshman didn't play much at all. And now we've got Epi who's put on about, I don't know, 30, 35 pounds since last year. He is bigger than Zion Grady, and he is definitely a much more refined pass rusher. You can see, I mean, the moves that this kid puts on, it's just like one after another, and it's just so fluid that you can see what he's done and what his upbringing was coming to fruition. And that is that West Coast, the Uiagalelei, like pass rushing circuit, those Polynesian pass rushing monsters is what he came up in. This is what he's been doing since he was a young dude. And now he's unleashing it and it looks amazing. And it is something to see. Let me pull up the roster here as I've got it to take a look at while we're talking about it. So also on the outside, we've of course got freshman Kari Wilder, who to me is a guy that is at some point this year going to be getting some serious run. We're going to see him play because when we look at Zion Grady and we look at Epi Satanile, I like them both. Neither of them have the level of power and explosion that Kari has. For Kari, it's going to be about consistency. Is he going to be able to put it out there consistently? When they feel safe that he can, he'll be playing. No doubt about that in my mind. You've also got freshman Dre Quinn, who was dinged up in camp. I really like Dre. I don't think we'll see much of him this year. And Darius McKinley, who came in as a defensive tackle. He is very light, about 270, and they have kind of shifted him to the outside for the time being until maybe he bulks up or something. But that is how it looks like on the edge. How about in the middle? On the inside, where you bring in James Smith, who didn't have a great year last year at Alabama. He was one of their lowest graded defenders. I think that he comes to Ohio State and has been totally rejuvenated physically and mentally. I think he's off the charts with his power. One of the most impressive guys I saw all spring. And if he could keep his head in the game, if he can limit the penalties that have plagued him throughout his career, the bonehead hits, late flags, offsides, this is a guy who's been plagued by bonehead kind of stuff. If he can get that behind him and he can stop beating his man and then not paying attention to where the ball is, like this guy has made so many plays and then given him away in his career. It's unbelievable where he'll crush the offensive line. He'll beat it, but he'll get himself out of position and have no chance at the ball and not really affect the play. If he can kind of just get that all together, I think he can be a first rounder. And I have just got the utmost respect for this guy's talent and ability. I think he is definitely, when Ohio State brought him in, I wasn't excited until I got my own eyes on him. I mean, this guy is different. And I'm really, really looking forward to James Smith, who I think is absolutely, unequivocally, the number one defensive tackle on this team. John Walker comes in from Central Florida and is playing similar to James, who's playing one and three tech, primarily three tech. John Walker has been playing them both over the spring, but he's primarily a one tech. And John Walker, you saw him in the spring game, man, looked really good next to James. They made a good pair, a really good combo. John had a pretty good career at UCF. And it says a lot that Larry Johnson really wanted John Walker coming out of high school. And then he wants him after 3 years at Central Florida. to come and join him now. It means he's progressed in a way that he thought he had. And he's going to be the guy, I think, starting at One Tech. And we also got Willie Smith there. And Will, I thought last year, was a heck of a surprise. I thought Will Smith was extremely solid every time he was out there. And to me, I think we're going to continue to see Will eat into some more of those snaps. That's great. I don't want to see him be the starter, but I would love to see him be a guy that's logging at least 10 snaps a game, 15 snaps a game, because I think he adds a different element. And Josh Padilla talked about this last year. When Will comes in there, because he's a different body type, it just kind of throws you off as a blocker. And I think that they can utilize that. So really excited for Will. But the biggest question mark here on this defensive line on the interior is definitely Edrick Houston. Edrick Houston was a five-star coming in, and he was an edge. So he comes in as an edge, and he's promptly talked into moving to the inside, which is, I think, something we're going to see repeat itself in the class of 2027, where you just kind of show a guy through some certain things why it would be more advantageous for him to play on the inside. And they did that with Edrick, and Edrick became so enthused about it that it sounded like it was his idea by the time he was done talking about it halfway through his freshman year, moving inside. And it looked good his freshman year, the second half for his freshman year. And then you go into last year, as a sophomore, and I feel like my expectations, probably your expectations, were just too high. They were too high because what we saw were flashes of the really good from Edrick. We also saw flashes of really bad, and that's youth and inconsistency. What we know about Edrick, number one, he's an all-time great guy. This guy, what it is to be a Buckeye, I mean, this dude ranks 100 out of 100. He is excellent, treats everybody great, even treats the media great, knows everybody's names. I mean, he is a star, a total star. Now, I want him to be a star on the field. To do that, he needs to be more consistent. He's worked on his body a ton. He looks so much more muscular from last year to this year. And I'm telling you, just looks-wise, if looks could kill, this is the killer in the inside. Just him to James Smith, what a difference. Like, he's so much bigger and more filled out than James Smith. James Smith is more powerful when you're watching them play. But Edrick, if we can get more consistency out of him, can he be the guy that takes that next step and all of a sudden it's Edrick Houston we're talking about is no longer like waiting and hoping this comes, but here it is. He's going to be that first round type of guy. He's going to be that Tyleek K-Mac type of dude. My personal opinion is he was overrated coming in. I don't think he was a five-star coming in. I think he was more of a fringe top 100 guy. And what we see out of him this year is going to definitely be more consistent than it was last year. But I don't really think that we're looking at him as being a potential game wrecker. I'm just hoping to get more consistency out of him. Now, when we talk about these guys as a foursome, that foursome of John Walker and Will Smith, James Smith and Edrick Houston, is that a fearsome foursome? Hell yeah, it is. I really like that foursome. I feel very good about that foursome. And when we look on the exterior, Kenyatta Jackson is going to be a dog. After that, there's nothing but question marks, but there are so many guys that I think have a high enough ceiling that the odds are one of these dudes is going to hit, right? I mean, just playing the odds. One of these guys is going to be a dude. There's too many for it not to happen. So as far as top 10 defensive lines in the country, which is how I got started on all this, I think the Ohio State defensive line ceiling is roughly 5-6. I think Oregon has the best defensive line in the country with Tioti and Uiagalelei, who had like 16 sacks between them last year. And then Bear Alexander, who surprisingly, when he transferred, from Georgia to USC and then to Oregon. I was laughing at Oregon for taking him because he's such a head case. Great first season with Oregon. He's returning on the inside with Amari Washington. Like, that foursome right there is a highly drafted foursome, top tier at Oregon. And then Miami, once again, Jason Taylor is absolutely proving to be the best. They bring in Damon Wilson, number one, and they've got Marquise Lightfoot back, Armando Blunt, on the inside, Justin Scott, Ahmed Moten. They bring in Jarquez Carter. Jarquez Carter, who I think is going to be a dude. I've not given up on that, and I'll be rooting for him. He's a Juckeye. Number three, I think Notre Dame is at number three with Bryce Young emerging this year. 6'7", 290. He's going to emerge. Traore, and they bring in Keon Keeley from Alabama, who I think is probably ready to take that next step. It looked like it towards the end of it last year. But who I really liked was Ohio kid, Francis Briwu out of Pitt, who I was hoping the Buckeyes might sign in the transfer portal. They bring him in, and Teon Gray out of Oregon on the inside. So they're pretty loaded. And Texas is pretty loaded as well with Hero Canoe. Now in his final year, we'll see what he's able to do. But Murad Watson on the inside with Alex January, Justice Terry, can he emerge? And of course, they've got Colin Simmons on the outside and Lance Jackson, who's another five-star who was a freshman last year, started coming on late in the year. At number five, I got Oklahoma, play a really exciting brand. David Stone entered the transfer portal, rumored to enter the transfer portal for like a day. And I was really hoping we could get in on that, but he ends up staying at Oklahoma. He's a tackle along with Jaden Jackson that make up maybe the best two tackles in the country. And then they've got a stud edge rusher, but Brent Venable's defensive line is awesome. So I'm going to give them number five, and I'll go Ohio State number six. So the Buckeyes are number six on my list. Michigan, number seven. They look pretty good. Indiana, I've got at number eight. They lost a lot. They brought in a lot, and the guys that they bring in are so Indiana. Like, they brought in two dudes from Kansas State, right? What does Kansas State and Indiana have in common? Hard nose, discipline, football. We're going to be exactly where we're supposed to be. Like, it's so Indiana to bring in Kansas State dudes. They bring in a kid from JMU, a kid from Tulsa, just guys that they know are going to be their fits. And then they're going to play the most disciplined, perfect football that you can play and force you to beat yourself. And they do it well. So I've got them at number eight. Number nine, I've got Texas Tech. Texas Tech essentially went and purchased an entire defensive line again. And a bunch of these guys from the MAC, they got a dude from Akron, a dude who's a stud from Miami, Ohio. They got a dude from Kent State. So they bring in all these dudes from the MAC. And on top of that, some pieces, parts from here or there. But we're talking high-level dudes. I mean, guys that a lot of people wanted. And I don't know, man. They've just got so much money that I feel like this is probably pretty easy if you got a scouting department to just go spend and buy the pieces, parts to put this together. And they got one returning stud. So I got them in the top 10, along with Ole Miss rounding out the top 10. Georgia probably just outside there. And that's what I got. So to me, the Buckeyes, mid-half of the top 10. Is the ceiling, but they got to perform well. So that's where I got them. Let me know where you got them. Now, let's all please like the show. If you have not subscribed, please subscribe to the show. It just helps you find the shows easier. It helps us a ton here on the creator side. I wanted to show you a couple of funny things I ran across today. So number one, we're going to pick on three portion of the show. We've got Josh Newberg, who is an On3 on-air personality, puts this out yesterday from his show with Steve Wiltfong that they do. And he says, Tennessee is trending heavy in quotes. And he's quoting something that Steve Wiltfong said on the show. Steve Wiltfong says Tennessee is in line to land an elite running back. Now, obviously, when anyone reads this, who is the elite running back Tennessee is in line to land? They're going to say David Gabriel George, and they're going to click on that article and watch that piece. And in that piece, Steve Wiltfong says that Tennessee is trending big for Asa Barnes, who is a three-star in-state running back from Tennessee. And that is one of the most clickbaity, just BS moves I've seen in a long time. And it just kind of goes hand in hand with how they operate there. That's like at the core of the company value is to do things like that. And I try to always remember this and not get so fired up when I see things from there that irk me, but it happens a lot. Another thing I saw. Now, if you don't follow my buddy, AZ Buck Guy on Twitter, you should. He's a Juck guy. We love him here. What he did was he tweeted out this picture of Max Riley, Ohio State freshman Max Riley. And he says, we say this every year, but it's true. This is exactly what I want an offensive line to look like. Receding hairline, two kids at home, the face of a man who's about to punch the clock on a 15-hour shift in the coal mines, lunch pail in hand, pure blue-collar grit. Now, we love Max here on the show. He's been on the show with us. We also love Max's dad, who I know, who is also a big-time Juck guy and watches the show, who took this tweet that Arizona Buckeye said, and he retweeted it on his Instagram, and he said, eat your hearts out, ladies. He's got five kids at home, all younger siblings, and relatives who worked in Kentucky coal mines and Ohio steel mills. And it is so cute because he does have five younger siblings. And I suspect it might not be the only Riley boy we see at Ohio State when it's all said and done. Dad, by the way, you know, you look at Max Riley lining up next to Sam Greer and you're like, man, Sam Greer somehow makes Max look small. Max's dad is like Sam's size. So odds are we're going to get another couple of very large Riley boys. In addition, you know, there are ways to, and this is kind of like industry talk, the way you get a big national show or you grow a big national brand is you basically want to focus on the positive, right? When I'm talking about Ohio State, for instance, if I'm an objective national guy, I want to say something positive about your team. And then when I talk about this team over here, even if I'm bringing up something where they're not in dire straits, I'm going to like finish it on a positive tone. And by doing that, when a fan base, a college football fan base, thinks of this particular guy, they feel like they have an ally. If they feel like that guy is an adversary, if he says something bad about them, they don't want to watch him. And it's not the way to get a show big. So what we see from a lot of these national guys is they blow smoke up the keister of every program and every situation, no matter what. Recently, I was talking about, just the other day, one of my least favorite, J.D. Pickell from On3. This is this guy's MO. Everybody is doing great. Everybody's doing great. Year three, Matt Rhule. Year three, Matt Rhule. He pumped it all off season last year. Nebraska, Matt Rhule. Year three, this is when it's going to be good. And they barely get by Cincinnati. It's an embarrassment in like week one or week two. And he immediately comes on. And he says, this is what it is. Year three, Matt Rhule. This is what we're about to see unfold. Never give up. Never quit. It's year three, Matt Rhule. And by doing this, he ingratiates the Nebraska fan base. Now they like him. And this is the recipe of how you build a big national show. Now, I can't do it. I can't do it because I can't be fake. And I'm going to always say it like it is. Now, that's not the recipe to grow a big national show. I can't roast on Nebraska and then expect Nebraska fans to continue to watch. I can't tear Lincoln Riley apart and then expect them to continue to watch. Now, there are some people who do this, who will call it like it is, that have national shows, but their ceiling is capped so low. Their ceiling, for instance, is no bigger than mine is, just covering one team. And that's a shame. I wish it was the other way. But when I hear things like this, what I'm about to play for you, this is one of the more just most repulsive, disgusting, ass-kissing things I've ever heard when we talk about this. Listen to this drivel.
I think for Tennessee, if you win this recruitment, it is a signal fire to the rest of college football as to what is currently going on in Knoxville in terms of the direction you're trending.
That is the direction they're trending. And by the way, the reason they can afford to pay so much for David Gabriel George is because they have 6 blue chip prospects they're paying in this class and 9 3-stars. Would you prefer that? Should Ohio State lose? Would you prefer David Gabriel George if you had 7 blue chips and 9 3-stars? Hell no, you wouldn't. No, you wouldn't. But the first of all, they got Faison Brandon last year. They got TK Keys. They got one of the best quarterbacks and one of the very best wide receivers last year. What is this any different? It's not. It's not. What this is a blatant ass-kissing move by a national dweeb, and I just can't stand the whole format of it, which is why I'm never going to be able to do that, which is a shame, but I could never be that phony. I could never be that phony. There's nobody in college football, if David Gabriel George goes to Tennessee, that is sitting back thinking, oh, shit, we got a problem on our hands now. Here they come. Nobody. Not happening. Anyways, this is my weekly roast of the pickster. Robert Cooper. Hey, Robert, what's up, buddy? Juck, love your show. Ask a hypothetical like, if any Big Ten football player with eligibility were to graduate this summer and wants to come to USC for the coming year, who would you want it to be? That's an interesting one. Thank you, Robert. I will save this. Woody says, is it blasphemous to say the Arvell role was pretty meh at the end of the season? Not knocking Arvell the player, just how Matty P. used him. I think it's been a pretty popular sentiment here on the show. I was furious with it. And you'll hear some people say like, well, no, he was using it as a decoy and it changed what the offense was doing. And that's all flipping great, man. That's great. If you can affect the play without even having to play, that's great. But is it also not like effective to use him in a different way and say, all right, if you're going to do this, I'm going to counter it and move him over here so that he can get in on the play and also a whole lot of fun? Would that be, I mean, it would have been a lot more fun if we'd have seen it a little different, a little more moving and shaking, getting him. I mean, if they're not going to play to his side, just move him around, right? I don't know. I think his philosophy was essentially like, look, if Arvell's going to cut off one side of the field here on this particular down and distance, then we're not changing anything. And it makes sense, I suppose, but no, we didn't see near enough. I mean, from how excited we were in the first half of the season, no. Honestly, I was going to do a list of the highest drafted, like least, like we hardly knew ye guys, right? Like so many Ohio State guys that get drafted in the first round are guys that we have known for years and years and years and talked about for years and years and seen on the field for years and years with huge highlight reels. The Arvell Reese highlight reel came in a very, very short period of time. Very short period of time. And he's just not a guy that was on the front of our brains for a long time. Destroy Mark says, I think Bo can overcome it. I think Joe Kim could cause a few of our edge rushers to have a better hand fighting, allowing them to get better leverage on linemen. Mark brings up Joe Kim. Joe Kim, the Kung Fu master, specializing in hand fighting, who comes in, and I have actually gotten some really high reviews on Joe Kim since he's been at Ohio State from people in the building, really, really liking the stuff that he's bringing. So that is interesting. Mark also adds that Zion Grady was hurt a little bit in the spring, so it makes sense the same way Riley got jumped. Morning, Sue. My man Easy loves the graphics. Thank you, buddy. That's why I want more Polynesian pass rushers. Give me the Uyunglele School of Pass Rush students. They work on it so hard from a young age, man. Woody's thinks we see Kari Wilder by week 3 in the Rushman package. That would be fantastic. I think he is just obviously I've got his jersey behind me. We all know that that's a guy I've bought all the way in on. Eddie is that much bigger than Spencer. Noticeable difference between Edric Houston and James. Yeah. Miami has their year nine linebacker back. We have got a super chat from Tora. What's up, buddy? How you been? Chuck, my dude, what's good? Long time no see, broski. Much love and respect. Happy to see you still going strong, brother. Thank you so much, and I appreciate the super chat, my man. We are the new Notre Dame from the past, says Ryan. We automatically get ranked super high in the preseason, and all of our position groups get ranked high. It is wild we have the defensive line and the wide receiver room ranked that high. I think Ryan is absolutely right. I think this is just straight up, well, it's Ohio State. In fact, the explanation of Phil Steele for the wide receiver room, you know, you rank and then you give an explanation as to why they're ranked here. His explanation was essentially like, it's Ohio State. That's why the wide receiver room is number one. They got Jeremiah Smith and it's Ohio State. So basically, pickle puffer. Chuck, when does camp kick off? Need those Buckeye practice clips in my veins. We've got August 6th, so I don't know how many days that is, but it's not a lot. Not a lot of days. But first, we got to get through Big Ten Media Days with Ryan Day and Jeremiah Smith and Julian Sayin, Jalen McClain. We're going to get to hear a lot from them, and that'll get us through that final little push until we get to camp. What's up, Adam? Appreciate you, brother. All right, my friends. I do appreciate you guys so much for joining me here for a live show. Don't forget, we'll be back live on Saturday. Not sure what time yet for Carlos May's decision. And should I wait to grade the defensive class till after that? No, I'm not even going to. We'll do our defensive class grades for tomorrow, because I think what we've got is this puppy kind of sewn up on the defensive side of the ball, except for potentially another safety, maybe a corner. We'll see what pops. Certainly you'd want a safety. You want one more safety. But I got a new ball cap, which is pretty slick, that you can get in the Juck Guys shop, and that is in the description of this video, along with all the other slick gear. And you can check that out in the description of this video. And also, don't forget to check out Buckeye Insiders, which is also in the description of this video. Thank you, Taryn. 3:30 is when we've got I'm having a brain fart here. Carlos May will be on 3:30 on Saturday for his decision, which means we here at Chuck on Bucks will be live at 3. So we'll come on early. We'll talk beforehand, and then we will roll into his decision. That'll be Saturday, and that's what we got. So check me out on Buckeye Insiders, link in the description. Chuck Guy Shop, link in the description. Slick hat I don't usually look good in hats. I really like this one. So you can get one of these or anything else you would like. And thank you to those of you who have sold out one of the shirts already. Boy, do I got a story for you guys. So if anyone bought the Neyland North shirt, right? The Neyland North shirt is the one that's my favorite, the Neyland North Massacre. So the Neyland North Massacre shirt, the original printing of the Neyland North Massacre shirt is now like a collector's item, like an error card. If you ever collected cards, some cards had like a misprint, and those cards are always more valuable. Now, if you got the original Neyland North shirt, the score of the game is incorrect on the original Nylund Norris shirt. Now, it's since been corrected, but if you got one of those, you got yourself a collector's item. There's only like 35 of them out there floating around throughout the United States. One of a kind, the Nylund Norris Massacre shirt with the incorrect score. So there you have it. If you want one with the proper score, you can find that.